What's going on, beautiful people? This is Mr. No Excuses and my man Jay.
What's going on? What's going on?
With another episode of the Hidden Truths Podcast, where we provide therapy through conversation, restoring trust and community advocacy, one conversation at a time. What are those skeletons you've been hiding in your closet? What are those uncomfortable conversations that you need to have that may be holding you back from your progress? The more we talk about it, the more we communicate openly and honestly about it, the more we can start trusting each other. The more we start trusting each other, the more we can start building and growing with each other. So that's what we're here to talk about with the Hidden Truths Podcast. Be sure to check us out and subscribe. We're available on all social media platforms and all listening platforms, Hidden Truths Podcast. This week's community spotlight goes out to Taylor Smoke, Black-owned cigar shop in the epicenter here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And when I say it's a very nice establishment, They have a very nice decor, nice selection of cigars, drinks, and the service is on point. I've been there a few times, and it's real laid back. They got TVs in there. You can kick back, kick your feet up. They have trays to hold your cigars and your drink at the same time, which I need to get one for the house because I saw it. I was like, this is dope. I need something to hold my cigar and my cognac. And they have it there. Mm-hmm. So shout them out on IG, Tailored Smoke, spelled just like it sounds, Tailored, T-A-I-L-O-R-E-D, Smoke. They're on IG and they have a website, Taylor Smoke. So you can Google them. You'll find them. Be sure to shout them out. Tell them Hidden Truth sent you. So, Jay, what's the good word for the day, my brother?
Well, we have two great guests to the room today. We'll let you introduce yourself. First off, from California, our brother that we don't hear from a lot, but we know he's doing this thing out there. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Jonathan Graham, coming from Silicon Valley, California. Pleasure to be on the podcast.
Word. I didn't know you was in Silicon Valley. That's where all the tech stuff goes on.
Yeah, I'm in tech. Land of opportunity, man. Nice. A lot of stuff happening in tech, so I'd love to see more of us in tech for sure, because it's definitely underrepresented, but we absolutely use a lot of technology, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all day, so definitely.
Okay.
And want to see that number increase.
And podcast where you got to excuse Jay Graham for his sexy voice. It is 9 o'clock in the morning over there.
I'm trying to sound like Ernest.
Nah, just be yourself, Jay. Just be yourself.
And again, we have our lovely Darnita to the room, the fellow therapist that always comes bringing a fire advice and skills to the room. So,
well, thank you very much. My name is Darnita Samuels. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
So what's interesting today, we have a topic that's very interesting to me, too. I love talking about business, but we're talking about Black enterprise. And for y'all to know that, you know, with all the business associations I have and Ernest has, you may not notice, and it may be kind of crazy to say, but you say, why do we bring a family therapist to the room? Well, she's Black business, too.
Yes, I am.
So it's not always just about what she counsels people on, but she has to run a business as well. So we thought it'd be good to have her as well to talk about some of her points dealing with the Black enterprise and how things work, along with Jay Graham being out in Silicon Valley. So, you know, to kick this off, man, let me throw this question out here to the room. What are y'all point of views on the state of Black economics right now? And I'm gonna let E start this one off. What do you think, E?
Well, I think a lot of us are familiar. A lot of the listeners are probably familiar with some of the stats around Black economics, How little or how infrequently the dollar circulates in the Black community before it leaves. Every other community, the dollar circulates in that community 20 plus days before it leaves. In Black culture, it circulates 6 hours before it leaves. That's a problem. We talk about, we always see the stat of buying power, Black buying power. But I heard one of the greats, Claude Anderson, say, there's no power in buying. The power is in owning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're familiar with stats like that. We see the lack of Black-owned businesses that actually thrive in a lot of our communities. And really, when you look at this, you have to also look at the historical context of Black enterprise as well. Looking back at Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma being one of the many Black Wall Streets that there were. That's one of the most pronounced ones, but there was Black Wall Streets in Durham. I mean, North Carolina had a lot of Black cultures or Black communities that were thriving.
Ain't that crazy though, E? Just to stop you real quick. You know, a lot of people don't. First, a lot of people probably don't even know about
Black Wall Street.
Black Wall Street. But also, I didn't even know there were more than one.
Yeah, that Tulsa, Oklahoma is the one that we all, that most of us know of, because that's the one that gets talked about and because it ended so tragically. But there were Black Wall Streets throughout the U.S. And for those who may not know, and I'll just specifically talk about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Greenwich District, just to be brief. But it was a area within Tulsa, Oklahoma, where it was all Black businesses. It was an actual community of Black-owned businesses. If you went to a doctor, it was Black. If you went to a barber, it was Black. If you had to go to the dentist, it was Black. If you had to go to the pharmacy, everything, Black-owned grocery stores, everything was Black-owned, so the dollar never needed to leave the community. Even the food was grown by Black farmers that got shipped to the grocery stores. I'll be brief about how Black Wall Street ended. There was an incident to where a Black guy was on the elevator with a white woman. Elevator came to an abrupt stop. The Black guy toppled over on her accidentally. She screamed rape. They threw the Black guy in jail. The Black members of the community went there to try to get him out. The white members of the community, they came and showed up with their guns. Everything went up in a blaze of smoke after that. And that's just the abbreviated version. But if anybody wants to know the full story, read the book, Black Wall Street. Getting back into our topic of today, we had that instance of Black Wall Street and Black economic sustainability. Well, the question logically would be, well, what happened? In my opinion, you had desegregation. That was a huge contributor to the downfall of Black economics, because you no longer had to depend on Black businesses for your goods and services. So your dollars were leaving the community a lot quicker. And today, we still haven't recovered from that. We have a lot of Black-owned businesses, but we don't have a lot of Black businesses where we can actually live and thrive off of. We have a lot of oil shops. We have the music stores. We have, well, not music stores, but we sell music. You know, even when you ask a lot of older Black men what they want to do, they want to make music. You know, we want to be the athlete. There's nothing wrong with those goals, but you can't build a community off of music and incense.
The diversification of businesses within the Black community is shallow.
Yeah, it's not a lot of diversity. There's a lot of talent still here in the Black community. Don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of skills and trades here. But there's not enough businesses that we can actually live and thrive off of.
I have a comment about that. I think that a lot of times the Black community feels like we have a roadblock to get into those different types of jobs, where it's just a facade. Like, you know, a different community may make us feel Black, make the Black community feel like we can't get into, let's just say, fast food because the entry level is so high we couldn't do it. But I think that facade is just a mental thing to stop us from, you know, breaking those boundaries. What about you, Ms. Darnie? Do you have any comments on what you feel like Black enterprise, or how Black enterprise is in this day and time?
Oh, I would agree with everything that's been said. Me as a small business owner myself, that was one of my concerns. Are people going to support me? I've had several people who will come in and they'll support. And Ernest and I have this conversation before, but even with my pricing, which is kind of, you know, my pricing is reasonable. If you go out here in Charlotte and you're looking at paying for therapy out of pocket, some people charge starting at $150 for an individual session. I don't.
For a 50-minute session?
For a 50-minute session.
Wow.
Right, $150. I don't. I I'm kind of on the low end of, you know, the cost of it, because right now I just changed my pricing. So individual previously was $65 a session and now it's $80, which is kind of, you know, a small standard of it. But still, sometimes people are like, well, I don't know if I can afford that. On the flip side, though, you know, then they will go to somebody else who doesn't look like me, and they won't even question the fact of what they are charging. Okay, so I will agree with all of that, coupled with the fact of I didn't even know it circulated in six hours. It just, and I think the 6 hours just to get it out of the bank, honestly. because, you know, even with me, because I am a small business owner who happens to be Black, I do try to support other Black businesses. It is so hard here in Charlotte to find other Black businesses sometimes. And it's just like the other day, I was looking for either a Black-owned yoga studio or a practitioner who happens to be Black who teaches yoga. I'm either way it goes, I'm trying to give my money to a person of color. It is so hard. I came up with one person. Mm. And then she does it, but she does it on a day and time I can't do it.
The variety is just not there.
Right. But then also we don't necessarily, and I'm not looking for, I want to make a statement, and I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes when I say this, but we do kind of go into this niche thing where we all want to open a boutique.
Yes, that's true.
Or we all want to open a club or a bar.
Yes.
Yes. You know, or something like that. And that's fine, but I'm a shopper, but I like high quality clothes too sometimes. Mm-hmm. And don't, just because Rashida on Real Housewives is charging $200 for this dress that, you know, costs $20. For real, doesn't mean that I'm gonna go purchase that, because she and I don't dress alike either.
Right.
But then there's other things. So I would like for us to come up with a directory where I can find, because it's very hard. I love the fact that you do this community spotlight every time, because whenever I come, I'm like, oh, here's another one. So you're about to become my source of truth.
And that's why we do it.
And that's it. I just want to know where are we out here? Where's the place we can shout each other out?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. And I just started watching Killer Mike special on Netflix.
And he tried to go Black. Trigger warning.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he tried to basically, I think for 3 days.
Yes, in Athens, Georgia.
Live Black, mm-hmm. in Athens, Georgia. And when I say living Black, he was using all Black products, or tried to, mm-hmm. you know, eat everything that he was living off of had to be Black. And it was so challenging for him to do that. I'll give you all a resource as well. If you haven't heard of We Buy Black.
Yes.
WeBuyBlack.com, mm-hmm. is the website, but you can also find them on IG, We Buy Black. And it's all Black entrepreneurs, Black-owned businesses, where you can find different products. Mm-hmm. I actually ordered some burning oils from one of the companies on there. Not to diverge too far on that topic, though, but let's back it up a step. When we talk about Black enterprise, obviously we can't talk about Black enterprise without talking about financial literacy.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have my man Jay Graham on the podcast today, because, you know, we cut our teeth around the same time when we first started our careers, and he always used to give me advice on investing and saving and, you know, just thinking outside the norms as far as how to make your money work for you.
I was going to ask Jay Graham too, before you asked that, I just wanted to see if we could just get his feedback on what he thinks Black enterprise is in, mm-hmm. his eyes, especially being in a place right now, which I just found out about
Silicon Valley,
where I heard it's very dim when it comes to Black enterprise. So before you answer that one question, E, could you just tell us some of your aspects on what you think Black enterprise looks like, or what you've seen with it lately, Jay Graham?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that ultimately all commerce comes down to, you know, product market fit. So you're, as a consumer, buying something because it provides you something of value. And as a business owner, you're creating something of value, and it has to solve your customer's problem, their pain point, better than the other available option to do that. I think that we as Black people have the opportunity to serve certain needs and opportunities better than others. I'm thinking of a guy, his name's Tristan Walker. He's here in Silicon Valley. He actually started a company called Bevel.
And that's actually what I use.
Okay. So, set of high quality hair care products for Black community.
Oh, okay.
And I actually use a, that's what I use to shave. I use their bevel blade, razor. I mean, he has the whole kit and caboodle for shaving and Black haircut. I specifically use it for shaving because it was the only blade that I found that, what they call it, bevel, because the edge of the blade is bevel, so you don't have to scrape it against your hair. You can just turn it at an angle and just slide it down. So instead of using the big razors and all that stuff, I use bevel. But go ahead about what you were saying, Jay.
Yeah, but I mean, he built that with an excellent mind for the target market, knowing the audience. He said, you know, his own personal story. I believe he grew up in Queens, New York area, didn't have a father that taught him how to shave. That was a pain point, being in corporate America where facial hair isn't always accepted, particularly on Black men. A lot of them don't know how to shave, et cetera, but Black men typically wear facial hair. Talked about his own personal story, and he came from that point of strength and then brought the best of the best. Nas was an investor, Andreessen Horowitz investor in this company, a very prominent investors in Silicon Valley, and built a really great company, and he just sold that to Procter & Gamble.
Wow.
So I think that our strength comes from our uniqueness, and that's where we should lean into those things. I think really all businesses could come down to that. But there's an event that's going to come up in the next couple months here that I think about the economic power that we have as a community that we give away. So I'm specifically talking about the NCAA March Madness tournament. We have CBS sign a deal for $8.8 billion just to run that, to have the rights to run that for 8 years. So they, just for that show, they get $1.1 billion, NCAA does, for showing that every year. I would imagine 70% of those players on that court are Black. What would happen if Zion Williams had gone to an HBCU and we created our own network to fund scholarships and real estate development and therapy programs to heal the Black community?
That's right? Deep, yeah.
What if LeBron James had gone to, you know, Alcorn State or Grambling, right? And all the cable rights could be going to these schools and building up those endowments. Right, and we could really actually put ourselves in a position to economically own things and control our future and destiny instead of leasing our talents and whatnot to someone else.
Why do you think that is, Jay Graham, that, you know, these superstars that, or these people with so much talent seem to overlook the Black schools and go, you know, to the predominantly white schools to play ball for? Is it just because of their reputations, or they think they're going to get farther? Or what do you think it is?
Well, I think we all, as human beings, before being a Black person, you're a person. And we all have the tendency to think the self-interest principle, right? What's in it for me? And you're looking to maximize your particular opportunity. And unless you're taught to think and you've seen it modeled and valued for you to think in a communal way, because you see this in the Jewish community, you see other Asian communities where they actually believe in working together. They have a much more collectivist way. And I think that it's not by accident that we have maybe a crabs in a barrel or defensive divide and conquer type of mentality, because the people that were running things knew what they were doing and kept people separated, right? But ultimately, if you have a gift and a talent, you're 18, 19 years old, and you have these colleges coming to you, and they're going to put you on the biggest spotlight, they have the most money, the resources, they're going to put you in the best shot of taking your talents to the NBA and playing on the national spotlight, you know, those things compound on each other. And so you do that. But it's not for a lack of opportunity, is what I'm saying. The power is there.
Yeah, we have the resources. I mean, because it's
really, if we work together, yeah.
If we work together. And I'm just talking about it from a monetary standpoint. When you look at a lot of the large brand names, you know, even the ones that you hear in music, you know, the Patek watches, the
Fashion Nova.
Yeah, the Fashion Nova, the Balenciagas, and, you know, all these things that we hear about, these brand names. We as the black community are the ones that are buying those things. The, you know, the Jordans, you know, the $100, $200, $300 shoes, the expensive watches, you know, all those things. We are buying those. So it's not that we don't have the money. We just don't pool our resources. Mm-hmm. There's a book.
You had said Fashion Nova, right?
I did.
Oh, did y'all hear the story about that? Mm-hmm. So Fashion Nova has a lot of hip hop artists representing it now, and actually they actually thought it was owned by a Black person. To find out, guy? But it's owned by an Asian guy.
Yeah.
So
we've been doing a lot of, and he made a killing off of it. So all that publicity that they put into it, for them to, for all the publicity that African American or African Americans put into Fashion Nova, got another community the money instead of putting it in something that we produce. I thought that was kind of crazy when I heard about it.
Well, it sounds crazy, but it's not crazy, because that has always happened. The dominant societies have always capitalized off of our ignorance and our willingness to throw our money anywhere. We don't do our research before we decide to put our dollars into a business. So that was another point to hit on as well, is ownership versus consumership. So Jay Graham, can you talk to us a little bit about the difference between those two?
Yeah.
And why it's important to know the difference.
Yeah, growing up, we think about, I speaking for myself, right? Growing up, you're trained, and the American economy is totally set up to get you to spend. You're thinking about consumer. The first time you get your first job, I had my first job, I was working at a record store. First thing you want to do is think about what you can spend your money on. Every Sunday, they send you all these ads in the newspaper. Between every TV show, they have all these things, right? And think about how you can give that dollar, instead of thinking about being taught what's on the other side of who's actually producing that product and selling it to you. So instead of buying, I think the perfect example was, Kaepernick had a commercial with Nike. They announced they're, doing this at the beginning of the NFL season. A lot of people were like, I'm going to go out and support, Nike and go buy some new stuff. And I mean, that's the mindset versus going out and buying Nike stock.
Right.
The idea of buying an iPhone versus buying Apple stock, right? If you were to think about a $60,000 Tesla, in 10 years, that inevitably will be maybe a resale value of $8,000, maybe $10,000, right? You put $60,000 into Tesla stock, maybe that could be $400,000,
$500,000. Right.
So thinking about long-term ownership and putting yourself to really train yourself. I mean, this is something I do this right now. Still, I will go into a mall and I just dissect everything in there. Who makes this glass? I'll just go research glass companies. Who does the tiling? Like, somebody here sweeps the floor. Someone has the contract to do the window washing. Like, I just try and put myself to always think in every question, who's getting paid here? You know, flying through the airport. Okay, Boeing makes the airplanes. Who makes these seats? How does this wireless, when I sign on, how does this payment system work? Who's actually on the back end of this? Just breaking everything down and seeing all the different ways that, your dollar actually flows through, and who are these companies, research them, learning to actually look at financial statements of the publicly traded companies and whatnot.
That's actually,
it's just a good way of training your mind to see opportunity. And then, hopefully one day you try enough things, one of yours will work out for yourself.
That's actually what I do now. Like, that's one of the reasons coming into business. I started telling myself, wherever I go, I want to think about business. What makes this run? How does this run? Where does the money come from? How does it flow? Who are the third parties involved with this? I mean, it's so many moving parts in a business people don't understand. Like, you can make money off somebody else's business because you're just a simple part of it. Like, yep. Right now, a lot of people don't know this, but I'm actually creating an app. And with the app, there are more people that get paid before I would even get paid off this app. I'm not the first person to get paid. You have people that you have to pay to get money coming in. You have to have a particular third party to pay out. You got to have a service system to put it on. Everybody got to get paid before you get paid. It's no different than a regular business. Everybody else gets paid before you get paid. But like you were saying, Jay Graham, there's so many pieces to it. Who makes the windows? Who makes the turbines on the jets? Who sweeps the floors? I mean, it's so many people that gets paid. I don't think we sometimes understand how many hands are in there before money is exchanged to yourself. And that's economic. But if we had more black people involved, you can get black companies to be involved where, okay, I can get this black third party to do it. So now I'm feeding not just myself, but I'm feeding the community as well. So it's very interesting. I think the same way. It's a great way. If we can get more people to think like that, maybe the black economics could be even better.
The key to that is getting people to think.
That's
always a challenging thing to do, because growing up, even in today's society, we're not taught to think. We're taught to do and follow instructions. You think about grade school, you're taught to be in school at this time and sit in this chair and follow these formulas and get an answer. But you're not really taught to critically think. You're taught to get a solution. So In order to think about opportunities, the first part of that is think. How do you get people to even think? And that's one thing that, you know, I don't have the answer to, because to me, it just seems like a logical thing. How can you exist if you don't think? But when you look in today's society, when everything is programmed for you, mm-hmm. you don't have to think on how to get from point A to point B. You have GPS. You don't have to think about how to read. You can listen to a book. You don't have to think about where you want to go shopping at. You got a million ads that tell you where you're going to go shopping. So everything that we see in today's society is designed to keep us from thinking, you know, from all the distractions and social media and all that. I'm not going to get too deep into that rabbit hole, but the key to it is being able to think. And you also have to look at what is being taught in the household and in the schools. You know, the skills that we're talking about, thinking about financial literacy, owning your own businesses, you know, all the whole nine yards. A lot of households, especially in the Black community and a lot of schools, aren't talking about those types of topics.
Right.
So when you get your first job, you don't know how to invest. You don't know what it means to look at opportunities and try to capitalize on them.
You know how to do taxes.
Yeah, you don't know how to do tax. You don't even know what taxes are, other than money that gets taken out of your check.
Mm-hmm.
So you're missing all these key components that make up financial literacy. So the only thing you do is what you have seen done repeatedly over and over. Spend. Make a paycheck, spend a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Live paycheck to paycheck. That's how we've thrived. And that's, well, excuse me, thrive is the wrong word to use there. That's how we've existed.
Yeah.
So the key to this is financial literacy. Understanding finances at a base level. And I'll just put this question out there broadly, and I'll respond to it first. Is how do you get people to have a baseline understanding of finances? To me, it's not hard, because I'm not even talking about investing at this point or buying companies or anything like that. I'm talking about a pure fundamental aspect of not spending more than what you have. And that is a result of greed and impatience, mm-hmm. which is more of a psychological issue. I want to get this today, but I don't have the money to get it today. So instead of waiting, I'll go get credit so that I can have it today, even though in the long run, I'm paying more than what it's actually worth. So Jay Graham, from your perspective, can you speak on that a little bit as far as those baseline elements of financial literacy?
Yeah, I think it's you're definitely right. Psychological, and I'm definitely not qualified to go at that deep of level to understand all the desires of what makes people want to do what they do. I've been a saver from a perspective of fear. I was always motivated. I didn't want to be like the people I saw growing up with, and I knew I wanted to have something. So that's why I was motivated to take the actions that I've taken.
And that's a good motivator too. I don't want to live like you, so I'm gonna do the opposite of what you're doing.
yeah.
But go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, but I mean, financial literacy is something that is something we as a country as a whole, you know, it's not in the interest of the systems, the powers that be, to have people be educated, right? The high school system, basic education, doesn't teach you about civic engagement, doesn't teach you about, you know, your power as a voter and constitution, how laws are written. And you see a lot of this foolishness that goes on in the government shutdown, and how these things are not actually representing your interests. It happens in more ways than just financial literacy, just in terms of literacy of how systems work, how Wall Street works, how, you know, the Federal Reserve works and banking and all these things. So I think the knowledge is there, but you got to have the drive to go out and find it, because no one else is going to show you that by default. You know, you're going to go study geometry and read a bunch of dates about, you know, people that died hundreds of years ago, that you go find all that stuff on Wikipedia, but they're not going to teach you about, you know, your health, relationships, making money, all those type of things. So definitely it's got to come from within if you have that desire to do it, but the information is out there and it is available.
And me and Jay Graham had a interesting conversation. I think it might have been a couple months ago. I think I was just walking through the grocery store, and me and you were talking, Jay Graham, and I was like, I said, you don't learn about debt until you have debt. You don't learn how money works until you get in debt. You don't understand a mortgage until you have one.
That's actually a good point.
Yeah. You don't understand marriage until you get divorced. You know, you don't understand these things until you make mistakes. So, again, these things aren't being addressed at an early age. But, again, it's something so simple. Don't spend before you get it. If you just did that one basic principle, let's say you're making $2,000 a month. You're bringing home $2,000 a month.
You get a new job.
So true.
Yeah, that would be a good step. But for those who may not take that first step to get a new job, get a new job.
No, it's actually a real point, because, and this is part of why, like, I do a lot more mentoring and stuff with kids, because you don't know the available options mm-hmm. when you're going to school, particularly if you're from a town where you don't know that these jobs even exist or how people are getting paid. And the person that makes $1 million a year doesn't work 10 times more hours than the person that makes 100,000, and doesn't work 1,000 times more than the person that makes $10,000 a year.
I think that's such a crazy way to look at it, a crazy way to look at it, because what you just said is funny that people really don't see this. The more money you make, the less you work, because yes. you know how to manage other people's time to make money.
Yes, it's leverage.
And I'm not even trying to be funny. It's probably the greatest feeling in the world if you ever can experience it. But to have other people make you money and you can do less than working these 9-to-5s or overtime. I know people work 60, 70 hours a week. And they make, what, $150,000 for all that time that you're in the office. You only get to spend it. But you got millionaires out here that's like, I worked 2 hours this week. I made sure stuff was running right, and I'm chilling. And I still make more than you. That's almost a slap in the face that people should look at and be like, shoot, that's real.
That's 100% true. And that's, I think, the difference between working in a business versus working on a business.
Well, see, that goes back to an interesting book I was reading, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. And they had I don't want to say it wrong. I think it's the T quadrant. Is that what it was?
And the four quadrants basically start off as an employee.
Correct.
And the ultimate goal is to be an investor.
Right. And the thing
is,
in
between there, you can be an entrepreneur and a business owner.
Exactly. And once I read that, it kind of changed my mentality to see that even people that say they run their own business, but they run it, are not running their own, but they're still employed. They're just employed themselves. They're still working mad hours a week, just, you know, just to make the money they want to make. And they say, well, I'm self-employed. I'm an entrepreneur. Well, you work for yourself. You're working the same hours you worked at a business. How are you actually changing anything?
Well, you just cut out the middleman. That's
exactly.
all.
Exactly. You're doing the middleman's work now too. So
right. You're wearing all the hats, which for some people, that is the goal, just to not have to call somebody else their boss.
Right.
Until they figure out how much work that takes too.
Yeah, there's no easy way around it. You actually mm-hmm. work harder when you're working for yourself than working for a 9-to-5 job. You can slack off when you're working 9-to-5, but when you're the primary business owner, everything falls on you. So if you don't show up to work, you don't eat.
You get sick. You don't eat.
Right.
And yeah. I think it's interesting, and I'm sorry, I may sound real passionate about this, but recently in my years now, I've been very passionate about business and how money works and how to make money. It's almost like if y'all have ever watched The Matrix, you know, when mm-hmm. Neo sat down and had to take the choose between the blue pill and the red pill. And like, I think the red pill was like actually seeing how the world really is. It's like I took this red pill and I see so differently how business changes so much. How business runs our world. People,
correct.
It's so crazy. If you don't really understand it or take the time to learn it, then you're just going to still be in the same place you were before. You're still going to be working at 9-to-5. You're still going to be thinking, taking 2 weeks off a year to take vacation is everything. But there's people out here doing so much more. Like, one of my favorite things I heard somebody say is, it's like, if you live for weekends, you're not living. And that's probably like one of the realest things I've heard. It's like, why do you have to think, why does a Saturday and Sunday have to feel so amazing when a Monday can feel just as amazing?
Exactly right. It reminds me of that book, The 4-Hour Work Week. I think it was Tim Ferriss.
Yeah,
Tim Ferriss.
Are you talking about that? Yeah, I said I was gonna look that up.
Yeah, very interesting read. But long story short, on that, he talks about how to basically make yourself replaceable. Because as long as you have to wear all the hats, you never replace yourself. The way people get to these million-dollar salaries and taking lavish trips and seemingly working less is because they figured out how to replace themselves. I don't need to be the one doing everything in my business. I hire somebody to do that, so it frees up my time to invest in other opportunities to make me even more money. So really, time becomes your biggest ally versus the money itself.
Can I tell a quick story? I
got to. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, one of the businesses I started 2 years ago, I opened my own shaved ice business. And relative to, for me knowing, it was like a turning point in my life to learn how business works. So I opened a shaved ice business in a really nice side of town of Charlotte in the South Park area. And when I first opened it, trying to make this quick, when I first opened it, I worked it myself. I would get off my regular job. I go straight to the shop. I work from 4 to 9 there, weekends all day. That was my job. I spent the majority of my time there until I hired my first employee, and I seen the world in a different way. I was like, wow. Once I trained him, got him working, I was like, shoot, I don't have to be here. He works 5 hours. I don't need to be here. I'm just sitting here looking at him. I don't need to be here. So then I hired another person to take the shift when he leaves, time for him to go home. I find myself at home now, but I'm still making money. I still got to go put this money in the bank. Where's it coming from? I'm not there. So then I find myself, I have my own food truck, and I'm like, well, let me go run the food truck while they're running the shop. Wow. Now I'm bringing in even more money. And like you were saying, E, once I got other people wearing the hats that I was wearing, now I'm doing less but making more.
Because it freed up your time.
Exactly.
To think about how to spread my investments.
Yes. Yes, and it's like I said, when I say it's a magnificent feeling, it's not the feeling of slaving people. It's the feeling of I'm able to have somebody work for me, pay them a check so they can do things they want to do in their lives, but I'm able to run a business and other businesses at the same time. And that little business I started a couple years ago taught me that I can make more money utilizing other people's time than I can do utilizing my own.
It's not always about the money that you make either. It's about the lessons that you learn just as well.
That's true.
There's no business exists without employees. No business exists without employees. It's always there has to be somebody doing the work. There's always going to be people to fill those slots. So I never look at it from the mentality of taking advantage of people because they're fulfilling a need.
Well, you're not taking advantage. You're paying them for time. So
right. But you mentioned you didn't want to make it seem like you were slaving people.
Right, right. I didn't want that. I mean, and right. I'm glad you understood. It's yeah. just when you're paying somebody, like these kids need a summer job because they were going to college. So what I did, I gave them the money to do whatever they needed for college, whether it's buy a refrigerator, have money for, you know, whatever it is during their college time. But then me, I'm able to take that money and reinvest it in my other ventures to try to make more things happen. So it's a roundabout circle where I'm actually achieving more from, like I said, doing things for other people. So everybody's winning in a way. I mean, you're paying people to further their education while you're furthering your business venture. So it's a great thing to do once you figure out how to do it. It's not easy, because then you got to always remember, when you bring people in, everybody's not going to have the vision you have to run the same type of business you run.
You see things through a different lens. Go ahead, Jay Graham.
Yeah, Jamie, you brought up an excellent point, and actually, I think it reinforced in my mind how this country got started. And I think a lot of the problems that we have today, if you don't have the right expectation about something, understand, it'll lead to disappointment. Hmm. And so the reason why I'm saying this is America is a relatively short country, but it was originally started by a bunch of immigrants, right? People coming over here. Mm-hmm. And basically America cherry-picked all the hardest working, we're not going to talk about the free labor part, slavery, but you've taken that's the most extreme capitalist form and exploitative, and I'm not defending that, of course. But when you think about today, a lot of the conversation that happens in, you know, the haves and the have-nots. How can this person have $160 billion, Jeff Bezos, and we have people that are on the streets, it's poor, and like, this is a horrible government system. But the government was never set up, the economic system was never set up to reward people for being wage earners. Profits are better than wages. And so what happened is that everything was supposed to be, I have my own farm, I've got my own plot of land, I'm doing my own thing, I'm trading, etc. This is a place for people to come make as much money as you want. You can have whatever religion you want. You can come take whatever risk. But you basically cherry pick all the people that was hungry and willing to leave whatever they knew in their home country to come here and make it. And that's why America's had such great innovation and outpaced all these other countries have been around for thousands of years and way longer. But the economic system is still set up and the tax code is still set up for awarding people that. So if you don't know the rules of the game, that's how it's supposed to work. Your dividend is your dividend and carried interest, which is basically investment income, is taxed at a totally different rate, 15%. That's what you see in the new tax code that changed in 2018, versus your salaried income as a wage, which is like two times that, 38%.
Oh wow!
So you, as an entrepreneur, like I tell this to my friend was asking me, when you're going to get this car. Is a $100,000 car. I told him I would not buy that car, but I will buy it one day. And the day that I'm waiting for is when I will buy it with pre-tax dollars, not after-tax dollars.
That's major.
And what I meant by that is right now, if I make $100,000 and you have to pay your rent, your mortgage, your food bill, etc., and let's say you get left off with $10,000 at the end of the year, right? That's your net income after paying all your bills. A business, let's imagine the same thing, that brings in $100,000, but in the first scenario, I pay taxes on that total $100,000. So I'm paying $30,000, $40,000 in taxes on the top of it, right? A business, on the other hand, gets to pay the employees first, gets to lease the country club, lease the cars, have the country club experience, have the box office seats at Bank of America Stadium for the Panthers game, fly and travel and do all this other stuff. And then anything that's left over, if there is anything, that's what they pay taxes on. And because so all these corporations
expenses.
Yep.
Exactly. So the point is to, exactly, you should be having your LLC set up and running your cell phone, your cars, everything through there. So that's what I was telling my friend. I look forward to the day when I am have my businesses set up, when I am leasing that or paying brand new car through that expense, and it is decreasing my taxable liability. That is the financially intelligent way to do something. That's so be a producer first, and then a consumer in a tax efficient way, as opposed to after tax dollars.
That is so real, mm-hmm. Jay Graham.
And that's financial literacy, understanding how it works.
Exactly. But if you don't know how the system works and that you're supposed to do those things, and that, like, so Jamie, immediately when you said you were open to Shave Ice, I was like, why the hell are you open to Shave Ice? You should have a mobile business, because in Charlotte, you should just have four or five people out there pushing the ice when it's cold, when it's warm. Mm-hmm. And then the other months, you want to have them moving those hot dog carts or whatever, selling coffee and things when it's cold. Because the ice is going to be a 12-month business that season. And you don't want to have that fixed liability of the lease for that space, that fixed space.
Oh, I learned. I had to learn but I learned.
Exactly. And I know you learned, but that's the way that you train your mind. It's just like a muscle, just like going to the gym. Because I wouldn't have thought that before, you know what I mean? Going through that type of exercise before.
The best experience are the hardest ones.
It's experience, yeah.
Knock you on your ass are the best ones to say, I learned from that. You don't want to feel that twice. You don't want to feel like, shoot, I got this $40,000 loan now. I got to pay back. But now what am I doing? Because my season is only 6 months. What am I going to do these other 6 months to make money? You don't want to sit idle. You always want to keep that reoccurring funds happening. So you're 120% right, Jay Graham. 120%.
Right, so you could buy. So my friend did a similar thing, but imagine you bought four or five hot dog carts. You have four or five employees, and they're all at the different parts of the city. Coffee during the selling coffee and hot chocolate and pretzels during the winter time. Shaved ice during the summertime, and you're just deploying them, sending them there, handle the marketing, and home accounting. Each one of those coffee stands or whatever, making $25,000-$30,000 a year for you. Boom.
See, we have a business in Charlotte. Well, it's not even in Charlotte. It's a little farther out now. What is the? It's not popsicles. What is not?
Are you talking about Pelican Ice?
No. The the gourmet popsicles. Ah, oh.
The my acai?
No, no, no. They had the little carts around Charlotte and around Atlanta, and they're like
carts are very, very efficient.
Oh, I can't think of the name of it. You've seen them around, E.
But what is it, though? I mean, what is the?
It's like they have like chocolate.
No, I mean, what's the point in that?
Oh, so what they do is they do exactly what Jay Graham said. They don't. They have one storefront in Noda, but other than that, they have multiple carts that they just send out, and they send people out with them, and they don't have to pay rent. They have no overhead, and once that day is over, they bring them back. They pick them up, and like you said, Jay Graham, that's all they gotta do. They don't have to worry about the extra money they're missing out on when the months are not in for them to make money. So they take them carts back, load them up, send them back out the next day, and they're killing the game that way. I think that is an amazing business plan, business model that they're doing.
Because at the end of the day, it's about, and Jay Graham, you mentioned this earlier, it's about satisfying a need.
Yes.
What is it that the community needs right now? Because as long as you can satisfy a need, you're going to make money. You know, whether it's, you know, food or food and beverage industry, because people always have to eat. You know, if you can fulfill one of these three needs, whether it's food and beverage, clothing, shelter, if you have a skill in one of those areas, you're always going to make money. So you have to get into the mindset of looking at the opportunities, but also valuing the importance of having a skill or a trade or an idea that people are going to pay for.
King of Pops.
Yeah. And actually, that's one point I want to break back to this, and this is not to say that black businesses do not apply to this actual rule, but the number one thing, if you see like a company like Amazon, they apply customer obsession, right? The customer is buying from you because you fulfill their convenience better than anyone else. You fill that problem better than us. You add more value than anyone else. And I think that a lot of the times, yes, we should support black businesses, but you have to understand you are dealing with a customer that you have to provide the best quality product to justify that. No one should support your business out of sympathy. No one should support it out of obligation because you're black. And I think a lot of times that I've seen, probably 7 out of 10 times in general, people that go into small business or whatever haven't really done their homework, don't really know their numbers, and aren't really providing the best possible thing. But like the sense of you should support me just because I'm here. I remember going to a barbershop back when I had hair, and I would wait in line, I would get there, and it would be, you know, just no sense of custom. Yeah, exactly. It would be a 3-hour event. And like no one who's high productive that has that the values or time is doing that. And so, and if you think about applying the same logic and customer obsession that these great companies that you use every day, you don't use Instagram or YouTube because who that owner is. You do it because they've done a great job building an awesome product for you. And that's the right mentality. I think you should take everything. And I think there's value in learning. You know, if you're young in your career or wherever you are, learn from the people that are doing it the best. Study those great products. Think about why you like a certain product versus choosing. Why do you use an Apple over an Android phone? Or why do you like Nikes over the Reeboks? What is it about that? The packaging, the marketing, the quality of the stitchmanship. You got to have black excellence. You can't just be black-eyed. You got to be black excellence.
I like
and,
that.
And that's the,
I like that.
The number one thing. Because if you do that, then the money will come. And it's not you're competing on price. You're competing on value.
Exactly. Because a lot of times what we end up doing, what we end up seeing in black business is they start competing to have the cheapest product cheapest service versus having the best quality business.
Yes.
Because if you build it, people will come. But if it's shitty service or shitty business, they will leave just as quickly.
Exactly.
So that's about all our time for today. But do we have any closing thoughts before we finish this thing on up?
I know mine would be, if you listen to this podcast particular episode, please tell other people about it, because this was very good knowledge dropping today. I definitely appreciate the knowledge you dropped on me today too, Jay Graham. That's some good stuff, man.
Oh, man, this is great. I'm happy to be on here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Oh, no doubt, man. Anytime, because you're one of those brothers who, for this topic, you've always been keen on financial literacy and thinking outside the box and looking at opportunities. So, you know, I've learned a lot from you over the years, especially how to be frugal.
Great job. He's very frugal.
There's a story I'm gonna leave off of this episode.
We'll save that for part two. How to be frugal. There's a couple books that we mentioned that I want to make sure we leave you all with so that you all catch it. There's one called Powernomics by Claude Anderson. He talks about foundational elements needed for a community to thrive. He talks about the education aspect. He talks about financial literacy. He talks about defense, you know, all those things that you need to build a community. So it's called Powernomics. We mentioned 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Another great one is The Millionaire Next Door. I can't remember the author of that one, but if you Google it, it'll come up. And also The Intelligent Investor. That's actually both of those, Jay Graham, you put me on to.
Okay. Yeah, those are great. Yeah. And there's a book called The E-Myth. The E being for entrepreneur, but basically working in your business versus working on your business. Mm. Instead of being at the shaved ice spot, getting someone else to do it. Basically, he talks about most people that go passion going to something, they're doing it because they know that skill or that trade and they just want to do it for themselves. But taking it to the next level, that's what that book is about.
And you said it's called The E-Myth, E-M-Y-T-H?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay,
I think it's The E-Myth. The E-Myth Revisited.
Okay, I'll be sure to look that one up because I'm a huge fan of reading self-help books, especially as it relates to my money. So as always, Jay Graham, once again, we appreciate having you on. This is Mr. No Excuses and my man Jay signing out with another episode of the Hidden Truths Podcast. We can be reached on all social media and listening platforms, Hidden Truths Podcast. Be sure to drop us a DM, like, share, subscribe so you can catch all the latest episodes. If you would ever like to be a guest on the show, you can also shoot us a message on social media or send us an email, thehiddentruthspodcast@gmail.com. As always, kings and queens, stay up, we out.